Okay, thank you for coming back for the last session today. I can guarantee two things. First, I can guarantee this is going to be an interesting panel. Second, I can guarantee it will end on time so that we can have a nice dinner. The panel discussion topic today is interesting. Future Talent 2040. Actually, that's about 25 years from now. 25 years from now, most of our students will be the main contributors to this society. I don't know about you, but 25 years from now, I'll be 80. I don't plan to contribute more. I plan to relax and enjoy the life contributed by my students, right? So this seemingly futuristic topic is really talking about education today. So this is my first statement. Second, before I came here, I checked the stock market again, because Microsoft stock is doing very well recently. I checked the stock market and I find out the top five companies with the biggest market capitalizations are all IT companies, at least in the US, and I guess that's worldwide. The top five companies, not in specific orders, including Microsoft, Google, Apple, Amazon, and Facebook. If you look at the same list 30 years ago, I guess you will see a lot of banks and all your companies. So some people tell me that investors are the smartest. They buy stocks based on their future. So if now the five biggest market cap companies are all IT companies, I think that's a consensus in this society that now IT is going to influence the future a lot. So today, our panel discussion not only talk about education today, but also talk about education in computer science. And more, we want to discuss education in computer science, especially for students' future. Okay, so we have wonderful panelists today. Let me introduce them. Let's welcome Juliana Ferry. She's professor from computer science and engineering and data science of New York University. Let's welcome Professor Sumon. She's a professor from School of Computing of KAIST in Korea. Let's welcome Professor Fred Schneider. He's a professor and chairman of the Department of Computer Science of Cornell. And let's welcome Professor Xiaofan Wang. He's a professor and deputy dean from Zhiyuan College. Zhiyuan College is one of the very famous cross-disciplinary college in China. That's from Shanghai Jiao Tong University. Okay, I will first ask questions. And then, of course, we'll open the floor for you to have more discussions. Okay, Fred, first the question is for you. Nothing here is rehearsed. Okay, Fred, I heard that computer science in the US is now booming. I mean, everybody wants to take computer science, and the computer science undergrad courses are kind of packed with people. Would you describe what's going on there in the US with the computer science?
Right, but I don't want to depress people. So it is true that enrollments are increasing in computer science departments in the United States. I don't have all the statistics for the country, but I could tell you, for example, what life is like at Cornell. Roughly 5 years ago, we had 300 majors. At the moment, we have 800 majors. And the faculty size, although we're trying to grow it, hasn't been able to over double. The result is that if you're not a computer science major, the chances of your being able to take a computer science department course is basically zero. It's still the case you can finish in 4 years, but one has considerably less flexibility. And so there's a fair bit of stress with respect to managing enrollments. We're lucky Cornell has some big lecture rooms, but essentially the limit case for us is the number of seats in a given lecture room. It's not the ability of the faculty to handle large classes and so on. So CS is booming. The good news is that it's an exciting time to be in a computer science department. The bad news is, if you believe that computer science departments have a role in the university to do outreach and have an impact in other departments and other disciplines, and I think that's the long-term role of CS, the way it was for mathematics or physics, then computer science departments in the US are having a hard time living up to that role.
Okay, we'll come back to that point. That is a very important point. So, Juliana, you see the same thing in your university?
Yes, there's the huge increase in enrollments, both for graduate and undergraduate, and we are really struggling in terms of serving such a large cohort, right? And also, lots of students from other departments and other schools want to take computer science and data science courses. And as Fred mentioned, it's very hard to, you know, fit them into our classes.
Okay, so how about Asia? I think maybe not that dramatic, right? How about Korea?
Maybe first.
So the admissions in Korea are strictly quota-based in most universities, so the enrollment cannot go up immediately. But KAIST has a unique admission policy that students come first and arrive first and then declare major in their second year. And in 2016, for the first time in the KAIST history, the largest number of students declared computer science. So we are the number one. And so our department, our School of Computing, is struggling to accommodate the sudden increase in the enrollment next coming year. So we used to, for example, we used to have just one session, one class a year for networking course, and we are now preparing to accommodate about 150 or 200 students and four separate sections in 2017, for example. And the number of minors and double majors also increased. In the case of Seoul National University, I heard that, again, the enrollment is fixed, but the number of minors doubled. And so they basically put a quota on the number of minors. It's only double the enrollment quota. And so those who would like to take computer science as a minor, they get basically screened based on their GPA.
Yes. So let me first tell you why I'm here on this stage. The only reason for a team to choose me to be here is perhaps I'm the only professor in this room who do not know anything about computer science. So I'm here to be a student, to be educated in computer science. So that's why I take a pad and pen in case just need to take some notes. Yeah, the circumstances in Shanghai Jiao Tong University is nearly the same as that in Korea and also in USA. Let me just share with you some data from my college, because my college has almost the best students from our university. We have five directions: math, physics, chemistry, life science, and computer science. Over the past few years, every year, the number of applicants for computer science is almost the same as the total number of applicants for all the other four directions. But of course, on the other hand, even for those students majoring in other directions, they would like to take some courses in computer science. Mm. So computer science is really very hard to write now. Yeah.
Yeah, so then there's a follow-up question, I mean, to all of you. What happens? Why is that computer science booming? I mean, what's really behind this?
Well, you started with the top five capitalized companies on the stock exchange. It looks like an attractive... I'd like to believe the students want to learn computer science because it's a fantastic discipline, it's really deep and all that, but the reality is it all started after the Facebook movie came out, and there are five companies that are highly capitalized. So correlation doesn't imply causality, but getting a job... And all the predictions for where the jobs are going to be in the economy suggest that mastery of topics that we think of as being in computer science is the best way to prepare.
I see. You feel the same?
Yes, and also what I see, because I have lots of interdisciplinary collaborations with other scientific domains, is that every domain is becoming data-driven. Everybody needs to use computer to analyze their data, to do their research. Right. So there's also not just industry, but there's also a push in other scientific domains to learn more and be computer literate.
Hmm.
So I think that also has a push.
Okay. But there's a question here. I mean, 30-something years ago when I... chose my major. Actually, I didn't choose it. I was assigned to computer engineering because of my score. I mean, the college entrance exam score. That was 30-something years ago in Taiwan. And I was so lucky I was assigned to computer science. So we are doing well today. My question is that after 25 years, do you really think that taking CS major means a better future? 25 years, a lot of things can change, right? What is hot today may not be the most promising discipline in the future. So what do you see this? Do you really think that taking computer science, choosing computer science as a major and then guarantee the future? Or do you think that today you should not only teach computer science, but teaching something that they may be more flexible or more prepared for uncertainty?
Okay. So, my answer is it depends on what do you define by a better future, right? If it means to find good jobs, perhaps the answer is yes. But if it means, for example, to contribute more to make the world a better place. My experience in our college is that all the five directions, at least till now, I think I couldn't find any significant differences among all these five directions.
Excuse me, math, five directions, you mean the five directions in your college?
In my college.
Could you describe what
mathematics, are physics, chemistry, life science, and computer science. Okay. Yeah. All the students in these directions, they work very well. Till now, most of them continue their PhD in world-class universities, and some even graduated, right? And in fact, for those students come to the university, my suggestion is how do you choose your major? My suggestion is if you already have your interest, then follow your heart. If you do not know what to choose, then you may choose mathematics. Because mathematics and physics might be more robust and fundamental. In fact, in my college, for example, for those students in math and physics, after they graduated, they may continue their math and physics study. But a fraction of them may continue their PhD study in economics, finance, computer science, and other engineering. They can choose almost every direction, right? So I think that's a good point of math and physics, right?
So I think we need to be careful about what's meant by studying computer science at a university. I don't know much about Asian university systems, but I know European university systems, if you major in computer science, it means you take almost exclusively computer science courses. In the United States, if you major in computer science, it means you probably take, in your second 2 years, typically you'll take 5 courses a semester. In your second 2 years, you may take as many as 10 non-computer science courses. You'll be expected to take some broad sampling of social sciences and some courses that are outside of computer science, but you could build on. So if the major means exclusively computer science, then I completely agree with you that it's too narrow. Mm-hmm. But majors that are set up where you are forced to take another thing as well, those students ought to be prepared to jump around.
Yes. So I don't worry about my CS students for the next 20 years. Mm. But for those non-CS students to have some CS background to take advantage of all the tools that are going to be available via cloud platforms, the Korean ministry is pushing a very large-scale educational projects. I think there are about 10 universities involved, and they have to reform their university-level curriculum to accommodate CS in all disciplines. Mm. So there's going to be CS for humanities students, CS. So as I said, the enrollment, the quota, admissions quota is fixed. So you cannot play with it. But with this national projects, we can, more students from non-CS major can have more CS education. So that way they can, have their domain knowledge, but be able to, use computational tools of this century.
Sorry, just a little bit of follow up here. You said that you are not worried about your CS students. Is there a possibility that you teach them today will be obsolete?
Oh, I think it's going to be obsolete. It's going to be obsolete, but we are living in this new era of longevity revolution. The baby boom generation, there at that time, people studied for 20, 30 years, worked for 20, 30 years, retired at about 60, and lived 10, 15 more years. That was the life expectancy at the time. Nowadays, everybody expects to live up to 100. And so you study for 30 years and work hopefully in the same field for 30 years, and for 30 more years. So when you said at 80, I won't be doing anything, I don't think so. Like, you will be working at 80. So the focus is how to educate ourselves to be useful for the society till we are 90. Sorry.
Okay.
So I think that yesterday Fred made a very interesting comment in terms of the students need to have breadth, right? And sometimes it's not like this specifically what you learn, but what's behind that. So you learn math. It's not that, today I don't remember much of the linear algebra that I studied when I was an undergrad, but the mathematical thinking gets built. When you study computer science, the algorithmic thinking, you learn that, right? It kind of like gets ingrained in your brain, and that's useful in many different things that you're doing, right? So I think that the being obsolete or whatever, what you learn, you keep forever. But we do see that the computer science curriculum has been evolving and has been changing over time, right? So if you look at a number of database courses where we used to cover in very much detail, the implementation, low-level implementations of databases, nowadays people moved up. It's more like how to use a database. So computer science teaching has been evolving, and one can argue whether that's good or bad.
Very fast. So for example, I teach computer networks, and the most popular textbook in computer networks is written by and it's published in early 2000. And in the past 13, 14 years, it's already in the seventh edition. And a lot of material that was in the first edition got left out, and now we have new edition this fall with new section. And I'm thinking in 20 years, what's going to be left in the computer networks textbook? So we have to teach how to learn, not what, but how to learn on a continuous basis, especially in this discipline.
Right. But it does seem apparent that we are undergoing a revolution, and it's the business about data science and machine learning. I conjecture that there will be a fork. And it may not be that computer science is what everybody at a university needs to learn in order to be considered an educated person. I suspect it's going to be what is now called data science. And that is, it's true it will grow. It seems like it's going to grow out of computer science. And if computer science departments are wise, they will continue to own this. If you look back in history, the math departments decided they didn't want to own physics, and they lost out on all of science that way, and became rather insular, and we shouldn't repeat their mistake. But the whole growth of data science, which seems far more directly empowering for lots of other areas, is the thing that is going to be the basic set of skills. And it does include algorithmic thinking, but it includes a lot more.
And a set of different skills also, right? Because one of the big things that I see in our students that come to the data science program with a computer science background is that they lack the ability to really analyze data and question. They're amazing developing algorithms, coming up with new methods, but when it comes to analyze data and ask the questions and torture the data, they're not so good at that. And that's something that data scientists need, you know.
Okay, in the previous conversation, we continue hearing the concerns about, for example, like non-computer science students are taking computer science courses, even choose computer science as a minor or double major. So now there's a voice coming out that all the college students, regardless of the discipline, should at least take some computational thinking course as a required course, okay? And the universities should provide this kind of course to whoever wants to take this course. Then what do you think about it? Two questions. First, do you think computer science or data science should be a required course to all the students, that not only limited to STEM, but also liberal arts, all the majors? Second question is that, how do you teach that course? You know, some of students, for example, my daughter, she hates mathematics, okay? And she just doesn't want to have anything to do with machine, okay, or numbers. Then how do you teach them? For example, I got Chinese major students. Do you really want to teach him or her computational thinking or data science? How do you teach them?
So for the first question, the answer is yes. I think that that's something important. I see, you know, computational thinking as, you know, as important as learning algebra or calculus that we all have to do, right? How to teach that? That's a question that I don't have an answer for, because we've been struggling with that. In the data science program, we get students that come from very different backgrounds: finance, math, statistics, computer science, political science, biology. And it's extremely hard to actually design courses that can actually, you know, bridge and cater to the different backgrounds that they have, right? So one answer that, you know, at Berkeley, they designed such a course, and they're making an experiment, and then I think we're gonna see, you know, how this pans out, but I don't think anybody has a good answer for that right now. At NYU, one of the things we've been considering is compartmentalizing this, so the meaning that we would create an intro to data science for social sciences, another, so essentially for the different schools, so that we can deal with the case for your daughter that she hates math. So how can you teach computational thinking and data analysis to people like that? Right. But we haven't implemented that yet.
Okay.
So in Korea, in 2018. The computer science education is going to be mandatory in K-12. So I think up K-6, there's going to be one semester in the first 6 years. You have to, like 1 hour a week, you have to take computer science, some form. Information, I think it's information technology. And then from seventh to ninth grades, it's mandatory, 34 hours, that translates to 2 hours a week for semester or so. And then also there's going to be an elective course in high school. So information technology education started in 2000, but the focus at the time was how to use tools. So I think everybody has this sore memory of failure that students got very disinterested after taking the course because it was not about thinking. Nowadays, we run a lot of camps for girls, and let them try Scratch programming. Mm-hmm. And Keist hosted a camp 2 years ago, and we also invited the mothers and the teachers, and they were just shocked that they thought computers were only for gaming, but the mothers and teachers were shocked. That was very logical, it was very stimulating, and we took it as a very encouraging signal. So we'll have to basically, I mean, there are tools coming out, like all the tools that we saw yesterday from your and Marty's presentation, that I think those tools will make our discipline a lot more attractive than, you know, everybody having to take calculus one, I hope.
Being taught at a university isn't sacred. It's okay to learn things in high school and grade school. So I think before we worry about what we require in the university, we should decide what we need people to learn. I have a cultural bias that comes from living in the United States, so if you'll indulge me, a question I would have is whether the people that end up becoming citizens are mentally able to grapple with the kinds of challenges that the society is imposing and where they have to make value judgments. So in the United States, we worry about fairness and artificial intelligence and machine learning changes the notion of fairness because you might accidentally use a training data set that is discriminatory. Maybe we'll figure out a way to build AI systems that aren't unfair, but there needs to be a social debate about what's the right value to have in the society and how you make that trade-off. There's always this question about security versus privacy and mm-hmm. surveillance, and different cultures have different views about that. Go down the list of fundamental questions that our societies have to grapple with, and we will grapple with them differently because we have different values. Many of them, you would be better informed if you understood something about computing. You need to understand something about how algorithms work, what they can do, what they can't do. You need to understand something about precision in data. You need to understand something about the fact that things are easily changed. Is Wikipedia that I look at today going to be the same as it is the one I look at it tomorrow? The encyclopedia downstairs doesn't change from day to day. So there's a lot of stuff that we've assumed about the world that changes with computing, and I would like our young people to be educated about that. Whether we can impart this in high school and before, or it requires a university course, is something that we'll discover as we invest in teaching them. Teaching them to use a spreadsheet in high school isn't the answer. That's not the thing that equips you to grapple with these hard questions. But teaching them the integral calculus also doesn't help so much anymore. Once upon a time, you needed to understand that to understand science, and that was important in debates, but that's not, I think, where the key questions are going to confront us for our old age.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Fred said. In fact, I'd like to thank Fred very much, because over the past few years, every summer, our students in computer science will come to Cornell for 1 month to take some courses and some wonderful research experiences. And regarding to the computer science courses, I agree with that. Perhaps all the students need to have some concepts in computer science. Regarding how to teach, let me compare it to mathematics again. At least in Shanghai Georgia University, we offer 3 versions of mathematics to all the students in our university. The first is mathematical analysis, which focus on those epsilon delta languages, very theoretical, which is offered to students major in mathematics. And the second way is called advanced mathematics, which focuses a little bit more on communication, which offered to us engineering students. And the third version is for called mathematics for those students major in arts, which perhaps focus a little bit on mathematical thinking. Perhaps computer science could also be taught in that way.
Okay. Yes, thank you. It seems to me that all of you agree that computer, especially computational thinking, should be kind of required as a fundamental course to all the college. Earlier this year, President of the United States, Obama, kind of proposed, I remember that as $4 billion to make all the kids in the United States being able to learn computer science. So there's a name called CS for All, Computer Science for All. But it seems to me that because this year I joined some of the education conference, I heard people talking about there's no teacher. If you want to teach that amount of K-12 kids all over the United States, do you really have teachers? How do you respond to this? I mean, not only limited to professors from the US, but also to all the panelists.
But I think Fred can start about from the early days of computer science, where a lot of teachers, CS professors, actually came from math and operation research. So how much help can we get for other disciplines? I think that would be...
But we are talking about K-12.
Right, K-12.
Just think about K-12 teachers.
So the same question. I hope that math teachers in K-12 could do a little help with the CS teaching. But then math is, in the Korean education system, it's a college entrance exam, while information technology is not a college entrance exam course yet. So, those math teachers are content, and they have no incentive to teach another course upon their already very heavy workload. Right. So how to re-educate, that's a serious problem. And we already formed a association combined effort of professors, elementary to K-12 teachers, and trying to push out like camps for retraining as teachers, etc. But I don't know how successful. We actually have somebody in the audience, maybe he's Professor Seo Jung-yeon. He leads concerted effort, but we are going to face a very serious problem in 2018, and we'll see. Yeah.
And in China, whether we have enough teachers for computer science for those students in middle school and high school, It in fact has a very simple answer. It just depends on what we call the Gaokao. Depends on the college.
Gaokao is a college entrance exam China.
Examination.
That's unified college entrance.
Because right till now, computer science is still not included in such kind
The
of
same situation as
right,
in Korea.
Yeah, the
okay.
same in Korea, right.
We should push together.
Yeah, right. So in Asia, such kind of examination serves as a baton to almost everything
Absolutely.
In high school. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, while in the U.S. There's AP test, AP CS1 yeah. and CS2 starting this fall or next fall, I hear.
Right, I don't know when it starts. Actually, I used to be on the committee that designed the AP exam, and so we went through this same problem of trying to get teachers educated in high schools to teach this. And there's going to be this problem, but if you don't have a stretch goal, then we're never going to get there. Let me point out one nice corollary of the goal to have students master something about programming in early grades. If we want to solve the diversity problem, then the way to do that is to make sure it's a pretty even playing field by the time people get to college. Currently, the boys learn about programming and the girls don't. And that means when the women take their first computing course, they feel like they're at a disadvantage because they haven't had a lot of practice. If it becomes a standard part of K through 12 education, then people who are interested in it won't be, and happen to be women, won't feel that they're at a disadvantage, and that may fix things quite a bit. So I see it more as a way to solve the diversity problem than as a way to necessarily increase the enrollments in computer science.
Yeah, at Chivin College, we are still trying to have some, try to find more female students mm-hmm. to learn computer mm-hmm. science. That's a big question,
yes.
right?
Yes, yeah. That's another big question yes, that right. can have another panel discussion to yeah. talk about it. But in terms of the shortage of computer science teachers, especially for K-12, do you think MOOC will help? There's a question about MOOC. About 5 years ago, I started to learn about this concept of MOOC. I heard a lot of people have very dramatic expectation of MOOC. Even some professors will say lots of universities will close because there's no purpose to have professor anymore. You just learn on the internet, okay? And we don't need a university to just offer diploma, okay? And so after 5 years, what MOOC is really happening? And just as I said, do you think that MOOC can, when there's short of teachers for computer science, especially for K-12, do you think MOOC can take the place or do anything like that? Okay, this is my last question from me. So after this, I will open the floor.
So, what I think is that the university is not just the lecture. The lecture probably is like the least interesting thing, but the fact that you interact with other people, I think that that's one big aspect that cannot be fulfilled by the MOOCs, right? I mean, I think that MOOCs have been great, and I hear great stories of people that are already working, that don't have time or the resources to get education, they go to the MOOCs. But I don't think that they really replace the, you know, academic experience of being at a university, that interacting with your peers, interacting with, you know, faculty members. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a place, but I don't think that they're going to replace a university.
I think it's not going to be mainstream as we expected, but just as Julian says, students take 18 credits a semester. That means at most 18 hours in classroom and then the rest in their dorms and libraries, etc. So MOOC alone cannot be the mainstream way of education. But the tools developed along the way are very helpful. say video recording, I check out Coursera, Course Assessor, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe MOOC is actually for professors, so that they look at other professors' class lecture and try to, you know, accommodate good things, and also for students who miss a class or students who missed a course as an undergrad but try to catch up in grad school for their own research, will pick up, you know, computer network person who never took an AI course but now has to use all these fancy machine learning tools, then could pick up over. So it's an excellent assistant tool, I'd say.
That natural selection.
Natural selection.
After 5 years, we've learned all about how well MOOCs are going to work.
Okay. Okay, any comments from
MOOC? And this afternoon in session, I think a few talks are related to education, the MOOC, and AI, and the machine learning. I'd like to answer this question by asking, what aspect of education that have not been significantly influenced by MOOC and other technologies? For example, let me take mathematics again, the classroom teaching. Till now, at least in our universities, most math professors still teach mathematics as 100 years ago, just use chalk and blackboards. Of course, right now we have better chalks and better blackboards. But they still refuse to use even PPT, right? So I think the future, we have a lot of possibilities in such kind of things. Because the tradition, one main drawback of such kind of a tradition of teaching is that they view all the students in the classroom as the same way, right? I think MOOC and other technology, AI, machine learning can help us to have a more individualized education, more social education, right?
Okay, thank you. So is there any comments or questions? Feedback? Yes, Norm?
Is there a microphone? There, that's okay, it's over there.
I just kind of welcome the panel and thank them for the clear commitment they all have to sort of ensuring our futures and making sure that computer science stays strong. The tremendous demand signal that you're getting from students, you know, growth from 300 students to 800 students, it's clear that, you know, that really influences the way that people think about what we should be doing in the future. I think, though, that in many cases, that demand signal is sort of a proxy just for entry-level salaries. The kids are responding to that, and that's what you're seeing. A company like Microsoft needs coders, clearly, but most people at Microsoft are not coders. Many, many more people at Microsoft are very aware about IT, but they read contracts. They, you know, they work about on applying computer science to X, where X is one of many, many different industries that they sort of need to go out and understand. So I sort of see some of the discussion collapsing to, you know, computer science education means coding, learning how to code or something like that, when in fact we probably need to educate people much more broadly about the way that computer science affects lots and lots of different businesses, the sort of history of computer science, what it's done in the past, and things like data rights, things like privacy that need to be understood by people who aren't coders, you know, who sell for a living or present for a living or do all these other things. So I'm just going to encourage sort of broad thinking about the way we approach computer science education, more than just sort of algorithmic thinking.
So why isn't the conclusion of your statement that the economists in the university and the political science majors and go down, that they just need to have a way to be exposed to enough computing so that they can do what they normally do but know what the coders are up against. I think in the, so some years ago, I was trying to convince our law school to hire some people who knew about intellectual property rights and privacy and other intersection topics with CS. And the dean said, Fred, you don't get it. It's not like there's going to be computer science law and the rest of law. In a decade, there's going to be law, and it's all going to be about digital rights and stuff. And if we succeed, then computing will pervade the university, and to be an economics major, you will have an opportunity to be exposed to enough computing so you can be effective about understanding markets. And if you were able to study management, you'll learn enough computing so you could be a program manager in Microsoft and so on. So I hope we get to that point, because we shouldn't be educating your program managers and your IP experts as computer science majors. That's just not, they don't learn the right things that way.
That may be. I think, though, that is really where they're coming from. That the entry path into a company, into a big IT company, is through, you know, coding or something similar to that.
Yes, but would Microsoft take the view that that you would hire vanilla economists and educate them about computing, as opposed to what you now do, which is take vanilla computer scientists and educate them about economics?
We could try to convince Microsoft to change. I guess that might work.
I think that this is a direction that some of the data science programs are actually going into, right? You know, being this interdisciplinary place where there is a computing component to that, and then people have the flexibility to study other things. Our masters in data science at NYU, half of the credits are, you know, some math, computing, machine learning, databases, and so on. But the other half, the students can choose anything. So can do everything in economics or political sciences or whatever they choose.
Yes, here.
To piggyback on a comment that Juliana made about, for example, programs like in your school in data science, and trying to make an analogy of maybe 40 years ago, where you would see math departments and then statistics was kind of hot and got growing and growing and growing and poof, split out of math. And then you saw statistics departments. Will that be happening to data science?
I mean, it happened to computer science, right? It started in math, and then it split
it
up.
It happened to computer science. But do you see data science getting out of computer science and growing to be something on its own? Or it's already happening, maybe?
I think that NYU, that's the direction that it's happening. Because so if you look at our Center for Data Science, it's a provostial center. It's not part of any school, right? So it's really, you know, across different schools. And there are political reasons for that, because you will not get buy-in from political sciences and biology and so on if it's something owned by computer science. But computer science is a key component of what we actually have to teach to the students. I can also mention this effort that we are part of. It's called the Moore Sloan Data Science Environment, and that's a $37 million grant that we got together with Berkeley and UW to build a data science environment so that we can actually have data science as its own discipline. That's one of the goals.
So I think this summer, the shock I had, I attended this Snowbird conference, Computing Research Association's conference, biannual, and the message, there were lots of shocking news about, you know, trends in computer science departments in the U.S., but the most shocking message was that the number of data science departments in the U.S. is over 200, and UC Berkeley has actually two separate data science programs that run, one by computer science and another by another department, another college. And I think that kind of boom in data science we haven't seen in Korea, and I don't know, in China.
In China, we just, many universities have some data science centers. Right.
Right. So yeah. It's mostly but not have research centers, but not
in departments.
Curriculum. Right. So data science.
We do have some curriculum, but we do not have departments, right?
Separate departments. Right? Yes. So the data science department in I don't know many. I haven't tracked them closely, but you need. I'm the most familiar department is Indiana University. They have this information science School of Information Science, where they have CS people and social scientists as well as statistical physicists and statisticians all work together for undergrad program in data science. So I think a lot of the program, data science programs are graduate school, master degree level, but so that's something to follow closely.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we come to this point, I want to ask a question for one of my boss, Dr. Janan Wing. She heard that we are going to discuss this. So she wanted me to ask you this question. Her question is, after 25 years, do you think the universities are still organized as it is now? Is that going to be still colleges, departments? Is the university organization should change in the next few years? That's her question.
How many years do you have left at university? It better not change for me.
You know, our university was designed according to the model of education, which keeps almost constant for hundreds of years. But I believe that right now, it is the time for us to rethink, reimagine, reinvent our universities. It's the chance for us. Yes.
I think that it's been a long time that universities are organized this way, and I think it's hard to change. And it's not just university; they are academic disciplines, right? So I would hope that these walls between departments and schools would actually be destroyed, because I think we could gain a lot from that, and that's what something like our Center for Data Science is trying to do. So just to give you an idea, we got 18 half lines to hire people, but these half lines work like we pay for half of the faculty member and the other half comes from a different department. So we have people from political science, from statistics, from biology, neuroscience, computer science, right? So I think that there's gonna be some changes like this, but radically change the structure, I think it's gonna be very hard in 25 years, maybe 100, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think it's a very old and efficient institution. It's what we do, we are good at exponential growth. We educate 10 students and they go out, and if they become professors, then they produce 10 students. So it's a very, very, very efficient institution, university is. So I can think of minor modifications to the current system, but I don't know.
I would be surprised if the same departments existed in 25 years. I don't know what level Jeanette was looking at, but I mean, you just have to look at Microsoft and their notion of how research is done seems to change every 2 years or so. So you can imagine that mindset would say, well, universities ought to change too. And I don't think the division to colleges and departments is going to change. But what the college is or what the departments are would sensibly change. And earlier we talked about whether data science is going to split off for CS or not. Departments work well until they get to be about size 40 and then they become unmanageable. And so there's a reason to split something off. And you have this hard challenge about how to decide what to split off. And those things are in flux. There was, in the 80s, there was a big debate within the CS community about whether it should be a CS department separate from an EE department or it should be an EECS department. and some places went one way and some places went the other way, and I guess I'm gratified that in the last year or so, a couple of the places that went one way have talked about revisiting it and splitting, and the times are different and there are reasons to split or not. But I predict 30-person units are still going to be there for a long time, and colleges that have maybe 5 to 10 departments are going to be there, but I wouldn't bet on what the departments are.
Okay, thank you. Yes, due to the time, may I, may I have this question here and then the lady behind? Okay.
So far, we've heard really interesting comments about teaching computer science, but I was also wondering if there are roles that computer science can play in improving education itself. MOOCs may be a passing phenomenon or maybe a failed experiment, but I think what's behind MOOCs is perhaps a bigger thing like open access, democratizing education, and more interactive global scale education. So as computer scientists, with all the tools that we now have available with deep learning, machine learning, AI, and other things, are there certain things that we can contribute to the society by improving education itself?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like whether computer scientists go out, help other fields, or they pick up computer science and be their own pseudo computer scientist. I think education is one area where we can go out and reach out, help. Short answer.
Yes, as I mentioned this afternoon session, Xue Qi and some other scholars, and in fact, as far as I know, many scholars around the world, they are currently doing some such kind of things, for example, to track the students' performance based on machine learning. I think the opportunity is enormous, right? Yeah, for computer science.
Okay, thank you. Last comments or question?
Hi, my training is actually in cognitive science, which is, I think, the best example of a failed interdisciplinary effort. So cognitive science started out really as an intersection of psychology, computer science, philosophy, and it is almost gone now. Now it's just psychology. And how can data science avoid the same pitfalls that cognitive science fell to? Because I believe data science is trying to do the exact same thing that cognitive science was trying to do, only now with lots of data.
That's a good question. I'm not very familiar with what happened in cognitive science. I think that there is a lot of demand, and data science is not just data science and psychology. Data science with a bunch of other fields, and the data actually is forcing everybody to have to learn how to deal, to learn computing so that they can do their research, right? So I think there's a broader need than a single field. And I don't think that cognitive science is dying. At least at NYU, it's thriving. And we actually have an open search now, joint position with Center for Data Science and Psychology, looking for people that are exactly in this intersection, right? I do see, and we have a number of fellows and postdocs that are interdisciplinary. There is still a lot of issues in terms of finding the right places for people that are that do interdisciplinary work, but I see improvement in there, right? In general, for different kinds of areas.
So I have a quick question. So cognitive science is a interdisciplinary effort between psychology and computer science. Mm-hmm. So that's a tricky situation because if you want to promote professors, then professor in cognitive science would be a psychologist or computer scientist, and psychiatry would be in medicine, but psychology would be on social sciences. So they have very different ways of evaluating professors, and I just wonder. Such an like a two what's like a dual this two subject appointment could have been a hurdle at the beginning of such an interdisciplinary subject. While data science, I think, okay, there's a social scientist, but statisticians, statistical physicists, and computer scientists. It's all in like engineering and science. So, I have a similar experience of starting web science at KAIST, and we just, it was impossible to promote, a professor with media and mass communication background. I mean, not promote, we managed to hire, but it was impossible to retain.
Okay.
So data science has a great customer base. And it will exist in the university as long as there are lots of departments who think their students need to master that. And it seems that the social sciences and the liberal arts all are benefiting from access to analysis of data. CogSci didn't have a customer base. And so it had to fly because based on incestuous kinds of research. That is, it had to become a discipline unto itself. Currently, data science is a marriage of statistics and discrete stuff like machine learning. And the gap is there's two completely different literatures. There's one about continuous stuff and one about discrete stuff. And so it's not clear that it will gel as a discipline that subsumes those two sub-disciplines. But whether it gels or not, they're in business because they've got a lot of customers. And that's a different situation.
I just add one sentence. So that back to education. So future education should be and have to be more and more interdisciplinary, which is really a challenge to all of us here.
Okay. So any one of you want to make a closing statement? Say some words?
I was gonna say let's eat.
okay, due to the time limit, let me say a few words. The purpose of this panel discussion, we intentionally invite panelists of very different background. And the purpose is not to find out solutions or answers, because we raised a lot of questions. I don't think there's a fixed answer to any university in any country. But this is a very rare opportunity that professors of different background in from different countries, and then we discuss, and we found out there are a lot of questions or issues that we can share with you. So we hope you enjoy this panel, and let's eat. Thank you.